the wondrous in all gold and black. You better retreat, cause we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.
Well, hello everybody, welcome to episode 331. It's three, and it's one, it's the ENS. Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Judah. Delighted to be joined by Mr. Liam. Ian.
Now that was an intro and a half.
You love it. You know, when I go, when I hit, I've just been thinking about this when I was doing it now. When I go, do you know what that reminds me of?
No, enlighten me.
Wheel of Fortune. You know, when I used to love that show, and I used to go and he used to have the £1,000 sign and then the 300, the 500, bankrupt.
Wow.
Before your time? Before your time?
I'll be honest with you, that is... I mean, I've got no idea what you're talking about.
Really? Oh, come on. Actually, it's absolute classic. Wheel of Fortune, absolute classic.
Let me rephrase slightly. I'm right in thinking that they have got that show back right now, haven't they? They're like, they've rebranded it and or doing like a modern version of it.
I'm not sure, mate. Maybe it might appeal to you guys if it's on CBeebies or something, yeah. Your generation.
Maybe I sort of know what it is, but no, I'll be honest with you. You've got to remember, I'm 25 years younger than you. I'm a lot younger than you.
Shut your face. How old are you now?
19? How old am I now? No. I'm the grand old age of 27.
Are you?
I certainly am.
Look it.
Thank you.
Look it, baby. Late night last night. Did you watch the Oscars? I was involved. Not involved, obviously, but you know, I was engrossed.
The thing is, in your mind, you definitely thought, "Why have I not got the call to go to this?"
I could have been a stand-in. I mean, there are people who go in as extras and they're kind of seat fillers. I mean, I'd quite happily do a seat filler next to Margot Robbie. Crikey!
I almost went somewhere there with a joke, and I thought that
probably best not.
I'm not going to go there. Yeah, genuinely, no. Obviously, I didn't watch it. First of all.
Okay.
I've got much better things to be doing.
You haven't recorded it for I'm Just Ken by Ryan Gosling.
See, even you mentioning that now, I didn't even realise that he'd performed.
Oh, come on.
I wouldn't be interested in watching it anyway, but I do like Cillian Murphy. I'm a fan of his, so
British Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention that. I didn't realise that they were calling him that all night as
terrible.
Well.
Jonathan Ross, yeah, horrendous.
Why was Jonathan Ross involved in the Oscars, by the way? What's going on?
Well, they were doing some sort of like beanback. I think it wasn't. It wasn't like he was there.
Well, I was about to say the sentence, knowing Cillian Murphy, but I don't know him. but liking to pretend that I know him, he will not be pleased with the fact that he's been described as British throughout the whole night. But it's kind of funny as well.
So you haven't seen John Cena's little.
Actually, I did see that.
Okay. See, I think you would be preferred to do that. I mean, you know, you talk about yourself and your body quite a lot. I don't know whether it's insecurity or not, but you talk a lot about triceps and lats and all that kind of thing and flexing. I feel like that would be your role if you had to do the Oscars.
Thing is, John Cena is obviously in pretty good shape. I don't think I'd be able to do quite the same job.
Okay.
I think I'd do all right. I've not seen the clip with sort of context. I didn't like listen to the audio or see what he did afterwards. So I'm assuming it was some sort of bit, but it did look a bit odd. And did he have some sort of gown on or some little frock on after that?
He was presenting like the costume or best costume or something like that. So he's gone on in the buff. And then as it's gone to the nominees, I think it goes dark. And then it's almost like a pit change. They all ran on. And within like 7 seconds, he was fully clothed in some sort of like dramatic gown. That was the kind of the crack.
Yeah, it's a bit odd. But
pardon the pun.
I don't. No comment.
How was your Mother's Day?
Pretty good, mate. Pretty good. Went out for a bit of food, a bit of Italian. And just chilled, watched a bit of the football. Not too bad. What about yourself?
Came back Sunday morning to Hull. I'm actually in Hull at this moment in time. Took mum out for a little nice little Indian meal last night. Little Indian tapas. I've got to play. Actually, it's there's a few of them. There's one in Birmingham New Street. I think I've never been to one. Mowgli. Have you heard of that? Mowgli.
Yeah, I've been once.
Okay.
And it's quite a funny story actually. That me and Rosie. It's sort of me and Rosie, I always hang on to this one because we went with her and her two sisters once in Birmingham.
Decent.
And we were going to some sort of show afterwards in Birmingham. I can't remember what it was. And So I've known her sisters for a long time. Me and Rosie have been together a long time. But, you know, it's that sort of thing where you're like, you don't want to be sort of overbearing and be like, oh, I want to order this, and like be really sort of demanding. I mean, it's like that kind of tapas thing. So I was like, I eat anything. I'm quite easy. I'll let them sort of order. I'll just take whatever's there.
Yeah.
But I let them sort of order. I maybe added in one or two small things. And genuinely, I'd left the restaurant hungrier than when I entered.
Oh, no.
I was I sort of always bring it up to Rosie as a, I can't believe you let that happen kind of situation when it was 100% my fault. But I still hang on to that anyway.
You got to order, I mean, they're all like, for people who don't know, it's like Indian street food. So they recommend like three dishes per person, stick them all in the middle and happy days. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was tasty. It's not a patch on Dishoom.
I completely agree.
Not a patch on, but don't get me wrong. You're walking past it, you're hungry, you've got some other options. I'd quite happily go in there and pick a few dishes and be very content. But in terms of like rivaling with Dishoom, it's not even close.
No, Dishoom 100% better, and you definitely need more than three plates. But I also am a bit of a glutton.
You do like to eat.
I do like to eat. So
you like to fuel the body.
I do. Well, you know, when you're as active as me, you know, you have to fuel the body appropriately. You know, a lot of work goes into looking this good.
Flowers for you, or did you pay for lunch, or did you split it, even though it was your mum with Rosie, for, you know, for the bill?
Well, my brother and sister were there as well, so we all sort of got involved on that
11
front.
Quid each, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Fair play.
I know. I didn't do flowers, only because I did flowers a couple of weeks before that, because I got my mum a couple of bits to, as a thank you for letting us stay in our interim before getting our house.
The old interim, won't go into that.
I know. So I got like a bottle and some chocolate, things like that. It was
a good lad.
I'm a good lad.
Is your mum a crier when she reads a card with a nice message in? My mum cries up. I think it must be old age, but literally they tear up with anything. You need to see the nose start going, and then they read a nice line and all of a sudden there's tears. I'm like, crikey.
I wish that was the case, but no. I don't get that kind of affection, unfortunately.
No. You get it on a Saturday afternoon with me, though, you know what I mean?
The thing is, if people knew half of what this... do I describe it as a friendship?
Hand on the knee halfway through the game?
The amount of times there's a hand on the knee, honestly. People are going to think this is it's the strangest thing they've ever heard. But it's a really weird dynamic. It's like, it is a friendship relationship, almost lust.
I'm a touchy-feely kind of a guy.
Yeah, I mean...
Don't get me up in front of HR, crikey.
I'm quite an emotional, you know, touchy-feely kind of bloke. It works, you know, it works pretty good.
People know now. We take our pictures, we have our little meals for two and stuff. It's nothing new to them. It's all good.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a modern world as well. We're allowed to do what we want.
Never say die, baby. Never say die. Wolverhampton Wanderers 2. It's Fulham 1. I mean, I've just written a newsletter today saying if they were ever to lose a game and have a proper excuse, it would be this one. You know, you've got your Brazilian striker out. You've got your South Korean striker out. You've got basically two guys left. Well, Sarabia, I guess. But you know, you've got Bellegarde who comes in off after 11 minutes. Then you've got your best player down before half-time. I mean, you know, Wolves lose that game 2-0 or 3-0. I don't think anyone's questioning Gary O'Neill or the team. It's just an unfortunate set of circumstances that I think most teams will have quite easily caved into. But absolutely continues to defy belief. Whenever you think they're written off, people see the team sheet or they go, or Neto goes, oh, we lost the game. Oh, Europe's over. Oh, this, oh, that. It's almost like they love the adversity, this team. And Gary Neal said afterwards that that's the most satisfying win he's had as Wolves manager so far. And you look at some of the games they've won this season, you know, Manchester City, Spurs, Chelsea. They've had some massive, massive wins. You think, in context, you look at that in three or four seasons' time and the results, and you think Wolves 2, Fulham 1, it doesn't, not very inspiring, you just move on. But the circumstances around that victory and how it has galvanised the team, the club, the fans, with everything that's going on around it is quite nothing. It's pretty, to be honest, sensational, Liam.
I think you've put it pretty well there, my friend. We can move on to the next subject as well. No, look, I wrote in my sort of analysis piece as well today that this is, and the tweet that I put out with the story as well, that there's sort of, I think adversity is the key word. We spoke about it in the video after the game as well. At every stage of the season when there's been some sort of adversity, Wolves have overcome it one way or another. In fact, Gary O'Neill spoke about it fairly recently with, I suppose, the challenge and task of getting into Europe. And you beat Chelsea, everyone thinks you get into Europe. You lose to Brentford, everyone thinks you're out of the race. You beat Spurs, everyone thinks you're back into it again. And it's, in a funny way, sort of similar now. You lose to Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think, right, that's it done. Let's focus on the FA Cup. All of a sudden, a Fulham team who have got an excellent squad. Maybe the starting 11, I think we spoke about this before the game, maybe not as impressed by a couple of the decisions that Marcus Silva made. I know they'd beaten Brighton the week before, but they could have been stronger. But as a squad, I think they've got a very good strong squad. And particularly in comparison to where Wolves are at the moment. And you go and beat them and you throw yourself back into it. But, I mean, look, there's probably someone missing here as well. But let's just go very quickly for a timeline of the season. You know, you've got financial issues last summer. Mm-hmm. Lopetegui leaving 4 days before the start of the season and Gary Neal coming in. You've then got all of the VAR controversy in the first sort of third of the season.
Yeah.
And then you've got all of these injuries on top of it. Mm-hmm. And at every stage, this Wolves team somehow manages to drag themselves through games, individual games, clusters of games, and get results that drag them and force them into this incredible position they find themselves in, where they're now in an FA Cup quarterfinal coming up and they are ninth as we speak and right on the cusp of making it into Europe. Now, there's obviously a lot of football to go, 10 games to play in the Premier League. You know, you've got to rely on probably beating a couple of teams around you with some fixtures and then maybe getting a couple of fixtures going your way. But Wolves have easily got a chance of getting it. They're right in the mix. And to have managed to galvanise a squad that was so lacking in confidence and backing in the summer and create a squad now that, yes, they'll lose games. They'll lose games between now and the end of the season. Of course they will. But this is a Wolves team that you back now to come back from situations. And that's something that you definitely cannot say about Wolves teams over the last couple of years.
Well, you put it perfectly there, because how you finished that analysis off, because, you know, we know when the first season of Bruno and everything went pretty well and they were right up there challenging for Europe, and then they fell off so badly at the end of that season, incredibly badly, and, you know, finished mid-table in the end. Even when Lopetegui took over and, you know, they do very, very well, they get up there, they're safe, and then, you know, they're safe, but the last few results were terrible. They got some absolute couple of thumpings, but they're safe, so they're relaxed. And yet, you look at where they were this season and the aims and objectives, and if they said mid-table mediocrity, oh my God, everybody would be dancing around. And yet that's, they're safe. They're not going down. You think it's the same players, arguably a weaker squad, and yet they're not stopping. They want more. They're hungry. They're not, you know, coasting around. You don't think that they're going to lose four or five or six games on the bounce. They might do, but not through the want of trying. Like, you think that this team have got a chance every single time these 11 players are going onto the pitch, regardless of the opposition. There's no fear factor there, and they think they can win every single game. It doesn't matter what 11 players are going out there. And that game, for me, says that they're right in the mix for Europe, regardless, because they keep on, you know, okay, but Newcastle wasn't a great result the other week, but at the same time, if you keep on, we said this in the last podcast, okay, if you lose, but you keep on winning, there's no draws there. You know, it's win, 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 loss, win, loss, win, win, loss. That's the type of results that are going to get you winning around Europe or give yourself a chance with two or three games to go. If you start drawing games and losing and then the odd win, then that's when you fall away. But I can't see it with this team. I genuinely can't, even with the injuries they've got and they're up against it. The character and the belief in this squad and in their manager is nothing short of just incredible. I'm lost for words, to be honest.
Chelsea and Newcastle play tonight, don't they? Monday night.
Yes, they do.
Interesting how that plays out. Obviously, that could affect Wolves potentially. But
and you look at those fan bases who are just calling for the manager, they're calling at the players. You know, and they're in and around Wolves, and you know, and Howe's had some issues this year, and they've had injuries, and Brighton and Zerbi as well, and they've had question marks, and yet all the teams that are around them, I feel like, aren't in a particularly good position this moment in time. West Ham as well, you know, just drawn against Burnley, got a 91st minute equaliser. A lot of the fan bases are frustrated. A couple of them are still in Europe, so they've got that to look after. I feel like in that European, in inverted commas, glob, Wolves are actually the only ones who are actually on the up, who the fans are buzzing, you know, the players are buzzing, the manager's buzzing, and they're on that up. And I think that's a massive, massive bonus when it comes to maybe the end of the season and where this all finishes.
Yeah, and what sort of, there was something that Gary Neville said in a press conference about 2 or 3 weeks ago that sort of triggered something in my mind. It made me think, wow, this guy's really aware. I think aware and self-aware of where Wolves are at and the situation they find themselves in, because he said that, yes, we've got into a great situation. I'm sort of paraphrasing here, but he said, yes, we've got into a great situation. We worked so hard to get here. We don't want to let it slip. All of the kind of things you'd expect him to say. And then he brought up and he said, I'm aware also, you know, a couple of years ago, Wolves were going well in the league, and in the last 10 games or so, they dropped off and it slipped away from them. And he's talking about the Bruno Lage season, his first season, or his only full season, where Wolves were, at one point in February, March time, genuinely in the race for Champions League football.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's early, still early in the season in comparison to, you know, the end of May at that point. But they were in the race, and they were well in there. And they lost a couple of games and then ended up winning a couple. I think they beat Everton, got another result in there, a couple of a home results. And then they went on a skid the last 7 or 8 games of the season and didn't get a win and finished 10th, as you just said. Now, the fact that the Gary Neal is, one, aware of that, I think most managers probably would be, but the fact that he was aware enough to bring that up in a press conference and use that as a marker, use that as motivation almost. And look, there's a lot of players that aren't in this squad that were in that squad 2 years ago under Bruno. But yet, he's still aware of how quickly things can change. And I think that awareness of keeping the players on it and not allowing any complacency, not allowing them to feel comfortable, that is the kind of thing that moment is dragging Wolves through. And then on top of that, individual performances. Three players that I mentioned after the game on Saturday in our video, and I'll mention them again very quickly. Mario Lemina, Ryan Aitnori, Nelson Semedo, all three of them absolutely top draw.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't the only ones. I thought Totti and Kilman very good, João Gomes very good, Tommy Doyle pretty decent. You know, there's other players to mention. Nathan Fraser did well. But of the three standouts, those three, not just for the latter two in their inputs into the goals, but their overall play, and then Mario Lemina in particular. I said it after the game, I've got no idea how he managed to walk off that pitch. He playing on the left side of midfield as well, incredibly.
I can't even imagine the amount of ground he covered.
His work rate, his work ethic is absolutely phenomenal. He's been a magnificent signing. And I'm going to do a piece, actually, in the next couple of weeks or so, especially with the international break coming up, looking at who I think might be in the running for player of the season.
Oh, my God. I've literally just written it today.
There you go. Perfect.
My top five people, anyway. It's supposed to go. But I was supposed to put it on this Friday coming, but maybe I'll leave it. Maybe we could have our own ones.
Well, you know what? Maybe we could combine it or do something.
Ooh, a little amalgamation.
We'll have a chat off the airwaves about that.
Great minds.
But exactly. But I think the latter two, if they're not in your top four or five, which I think they have to at least be in the conversation, then they're at least honourable mentions. But Mario Lemina for me is right up there. He's in the conversation for getting that award. And all three of them brilliant, and Lemina just impeccable.
It's just an astonishing performance, and they're finding a way, and it's just great. I'm so happy for the fans, you know. I'm so happy that it's changed so much. And it's quite funny, isn't it? Because you look at it and you think, when they're down and out and they keep on producing, and Gary O'Neill was talked, plenty of the media were talking about it, weren't they, in his pre-match press conference about manager of the season. He doesn't like it, does he? He doesn't like to be talked about like that. He just wants to get on with his job, and I get it. But at the same time, he must go away from these press conferences and go back at home and still feel pretty good about himself when people are asking him about it. I know Gary Lineker interviewed him, didn't he, after the game, and you know, he said, look, I'm so pleased that you're someone like you is asking me about Europe and about this team, and it just shows you we're obviously doing some things right, but doesn't want to get too... you know, too carried away. And I get that, because there's still a lot of things to play for. And even if things don't work out, and let's be honest, Liam, if you are to hedge your bet, and if you're a betting man, realistically, the likelihood is Wolves won't qualify for Europe through the league and won't qualify or win the FA Cup. That's just the odds, people speaking, is that if you had to make a decision now, you would say that it's still likely that those two things won't happen. But that doesn't mean to say that one, this season would be disappointing. This season is still unbelievable. And because they've got that belief, because they've got that self-motivation, what I've tried to say in the last 5-10 minutes, and you yourself, is you cannot write this team off. You cannot write this team off. It's still unlikely. It still is unlikely. But they've put themselves in a position where they can make the, you know, the most ridiculous theory potentially possible.
It's. I think you could end the season now, and it's still a remarkable success. And there'll 100%. Be a lot of supporters that will think, "Oh, but we're so close to getting there. We, you know, we've got a potential. Obviously, you've got to beat Coventry. We've got a potential FA Cup semi-final at Wembley in our hands. It's a one-off game. You could beat Man City. You could beat anyone. Absolutely, Wolves have got every chance of doing really well in the league and the FA Cup in the next few weeks. As much as the odds will be against them, the opportunity is there, and with opportunity, there is always the possibility of success. And Wolves mm-hmm. have proven that. But I think, considering how far they've come under Gary O'Neill, and look, he'll be the first one to say as well, I don't want it to end now, I want us to go further. And that's the kind of attitude that he's dragging them along at the moment, especially with all the adversity with injuries and the like. But when you consider everything they've gone through from the summer to now, it's quite a remarkable turnaround.
Oh.
And Gary Neal, the players, deserve a hell of a lot of credit for making that a reality. I think all the context is really important on this one. And Wolves were, to some people and in many people's eyes, down and out in August. They're the opposite of that now. 41 points, and I think they'll get a fair few more between now and middle of May.
I agree. Do you know what odds they are? I've just checked it. Do you know what odds they are to win the FA Cup?
Oh. Obviously, City still in it. Liverpool, United, Chelsea. They're going to be, what, 100 to 1?
No. They're 12 to 1.
12 really?
To 1 to win. Yeah, 12 to 1 to win the FA Cup. Yeah, you can't 100 to 1. But the other, they're potentially a championship side away from two games and winning it. So
no, but I don't, surely.
Keen bookmakers are going our business pretty quickly, to be honest.
I'm shocked that it's 12 to 1. I thought that considering it's City, I was like, oh, it's going to be ridiculous odds because City are in it still.
Yeah, no, City is 7 to 5 favourites, but at the same time, yeah, 12 to 1. Do you know what they are to make Europe?
Oh, make Europe. It's got to be
through the league.
Through the league. It's got to be 8 to 1.
14 to 1. So,
wow.
You know, like I was saying, they're still long shots to in terms of the bookies, but I think that both of those odds, 12 to 1 and 14 to 1, are actually skinnier than, or maybe slightly bigger than what they should be because of this team, especially the league. And, you know, we highlighted the last podcast and talked about league or cup, and do we need to make a choice? Does Gary Neal need to make a choice? Well, this result has again said you do not need to make a choice. Keep on playing. Keep on hedging your bets. Keep on being in both competitions because, you know, even if they do, let's say there's a big break now in the league to Aston Villa with international break. You've got Coventry on Saturday, then you've got international break, which we're going to come on to in a bit, but this could be a bit of a bonus, 2 or 3 weeks rest. And then you've got Aston Villa, you know, who are without John McGinn, of course. Even if, and you know, I don't think they will, but even if they did lose that game, they're still slap bang in the middle of this race. They're giving themselves a couple of games breathing space. This isn't a got to win the last five in the in a row. You know, they've given themselves an absolutely great chance. So you know, just brilliant. And you know, like I say, I'm so excited for the fans. It's going to be an exciting few months, Liam, and we're just buzzing, aren't we? Because it's starting on Saturday. It's going to be absolutely mahahossive. Got to talk about some downside, though. Of course, you know, we've had a very uplifting first few minutes. And that's Pedro Neto. We all, obviously, Bellegarde injury is obviously frustrating. And, you know, I think that with all due respect to Bellegarde, you know, Pedro Neto is the more serious injury from a Wolves' point of view. And, you know, as a match winner, as your best player in the team, he goes down with an injury, another hamstring injury, different leg, but the same leg that he went was withdrawn at halftime during the 3-0 defeat against Newcastle, tight hamstring. Just to summarise it, Gary Neil said that they obviously were very cautious with him. They looked at him during the week. They analysed him. All the scans came back. Everything, they went, they did all their due diligence, the medical department, everything that they went through said that that hamstring was okay, was good to go. Gary Neil spent a one-on-one time with him during the week as well, and they made the decision to start with him. Of course, it hasn't worked out. And he said afterwards in the post-match press comments that even though every single thing said he was good to go, that maybe in hindsight, and of course in hindsight when you're looking at it, and he's you know, back in the tunnel and with a hamstring strain, looking at, you know, a few weeks out, he thinks that maybe just the playing side of Gary O'Neill, knowing, you know, the game and injuries and niggles, that maybe he could have held him out or maybe started him on the bench. But it's, so he took responsibility, but I think, you know, I'm not gonna blame Gary Neil too much, because, like you say, when you go with the medical department, when everything's there, and, you know, you're looking at the modern technology these days, and they say there's nothing wrong with that hamstring, it's unfortunate, and it's also worrying, Liam, because, you know, we've talked about Pedro Neto and whether he goes in the summer or not, and we'll talk about maybe the potential ramifications of this in terms of a move, but you've got to say that Pedro Neto is a very injury-prone player at this moment in time. When you look at his game time over the last 3 to 4 years, it is definitely worrying. And hopefully it's not as bad as first feared and that first one, but at the same time, it's still a massive blow for Wolves going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to echo your point, I think it'd be strange or wrong of us to blame Gary O'Neill without sort of knowing the full information. We weren't in the room when the decision was made. We don't have the medical information in front of us. And I think if it was my decision, they gave Pedro a scan in the week leading up to the Fulham game just to double check there was no damage and check that he was safe to play. And the medical professionals have all informed Gary O'Neill that there's no damage at all. The scan's perfect. There's no reason why you shouldn't play him. Now, obviously, every player going out there after some sort of tightness or some sort of niggle is always going to be some sort of risk. It's always going to be a calculated risk to some degree playing Pedro Neto after what happened at Newcastle. But if it was my decision and I had that same information in front of me, I'm starting him against Fulham. So I find it difficult to necessarily criticise Gary. I understand why he puts himself in the firing line, but I think he's keen to protect anyone else from criticism. But yeah, without the full information, it's difficult to sort of come to a conclusion on that. But what we can come to a conclusion on, as you've just said there, is that Pedro Neto is a player that has got all the talent in the world, and unfortunately, in the early stages of his career, and certainly at Wolves, has been very much injury-prone. Obviously, the fracture to his knee, his patella, a couple of years back, was a very serious one. Under Bruno Lage, he did his ankle away at West Ham, was out for about 4 months, I believe, off the top of my head, that one. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's had the hamstring injury this season, which was 8 weeks, and he's now got the other hamstring, so it's his opposite leg, now another strain there. And
broken kneecap.
There'll be a scan, there'll be things to determine how long he'll be out on this occasion, but at the very least, it's going to be unlikely he makes a weekend, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Look, at the same time, you know, they were hopeful of potentially, you know, being less serious than what the other hamstring was. So, you know, you think 8 weeks was the kind of timeline for his previous one. I'll circle back to potentially when he may be available in a bit. What I do want to discuss first is, I mean, first of all, it was his birthday. I mean, bloody hell, you don't need that on your birthday. But also, international break coming up, Liam, and I dare say that he would have probably been in that Portugal squad come international break as well, you know, ahead of the Euro. So devastating for him timing-wise. I'll be surprised if he wasn't called up just because of the form that he was showing. And that's probably, you know, we haven't really talked about that too much, but for a young guy trying to make his way in the game and trying to force his way back into that Portugal squad and showing fitness and showing, you know, that he was back to close to his best is obviously devastating from an international point of view. I know we're very greedy here from a domestic point of view, but for Pedro Neto and his career, that's going to be a tough pill to swallow, because that might be, I mean, hopefully he gets back and he puts himself in the mix between now and the end of the season. But you think that you want to have a couple of squad call-ups behind you before you're having to make that provisional squad for the summer.
Yeah, and am I right in thinking this is the last squad call-up before the Euros as well, isn't it? Yeah, so the timing could not be worse from a personal point of view for him. And I think you're right, I'd be gobsmacked if he wasn't at the very least in a provisional squad going into the summer. He's very highly thought of.
And he may still be, but I think he's going to be playing catch-up now because of that kind of timeline.
Yeah, and playing catch-up when it goes into a Euros is difficult, because from a manager's point of view, they're keen to take players that are reliable. And I think from a performance point of view, Pedro has been very reliable this season. He's been very consistent. Yes, there's been the occasional game here and there. He's been quiet. I thought he was quiet actually against Fulham up until the injury. He had the one good run sort of early on, but up until that injury was fairly quiet for 45 minutes. And but other than that, he's been fairly consistent in performances. It's just the injuries. You just listed them there. And there's that knee one that we mentioned a couple of years ago was about 10 months, I think, wasn't it, at the time?
Yeah.
4 months for the ankle, 8 weeks for the last hamstring. Mm-hmm. This hamstring, as you've already said there, they were hopeful, and that was, bearing in mind, Gary O'Neill speaking directly after the game, having had a brief conversation with the medics. The same thing happened with the Hwang injury, where he said, we're hoping it's not too bad, and it turned out to be a six-week layoff.
Same with Cunha.
Well, exactly, yeah. So we've got to, you know, take it with a pinch of salt for the time being until we know more. But what he has said so far is that they were hopeful it isn't as bad as his first hamstring injury earlier this season. That was 8 weeks, and it was slightly ahead of schedule. It's probably realistically more closer to 12 weeks, and he came back a bit quicker. So doesn't bode well, at least for the time being.
No.
But the international break, actually, from a Wolves point of view, is good, because they need to minimise the amount of time that they're going to be without Pedro Neto.
Yeah, we'll finally circle back on timeline in a minute, because I want to do it with a couple of other players. But just in terms of the summer, Liam, and looking ahead to the summer, of course, Pedro Neto, the big name. We talked about the finances, we talked about the transfer kitty, we talked about potentially one big sale this summer. Will it be Pedro Neto? It's probably the most likely sale, you'd have thought, before this game. But I want to ask you your opinion now going into the summer. And let's say Pedro Neto comes back in X amount of weeks, 4, 5, 6, whatever, and stays fit until the end of the season. And I know it will depend a lot on his form in those 5, 6 weeks, but there still will be a lot of teams circling around Pedro Neto. However, you know, you're reading a lot of social media, looking at a lot of teams, you're reading a lot of articles about certain teams. The big boys looking at Pedro Neto, you know, Liverpool, Arsenal looking at him, Chelsea looking after him, Newcastle looking after him as well. But there's a few of those. But when you're spending that kind of money, and I think Matt Hodge said that they're not expecting a crazy market this summer and going forward because of everything that's been going on, you know, you're going to see less of these £100 million, £80 million being chucked about here, there and everywhere from certain clubs, and they're expecting a more saturated market to a certain extent. Still money spent, but maybe money with a little bit less risk-averse situation going on. Regardless of whether Pedro Neto comes back and plays the last 6, 7 games of the season, Pedro Neto is a risky buy for a club. It has to be because of his long injury list. I guess my questions to you are, one, will that affect his final price? Two, will that put people off? And three, could that see Pedro Neto potentially, and ironically, I guess, have more of a chance of staying at Wolves if they do not get that fee because of his injury record?
Yes, it's an interesting one, because to some degree, and obviously there's negotiation that happens with every deal, but to some degree, a player is worth what a team is willing to pay for them. Mm-hmm. So you look at Brighton, how they managed to sell a couple of players for £100 million. Would they have come down to £90 million to sell that player? Potentially. Mm-hmm. Yet Chelsea and other clubs were willing to pay that money, and they were worth that money because of the necessity from the other side to buy. There will be, to some degree, necessity from sub clubs to look at purchasing attackers and wingers and forwards, and Pedro Neto will be right at the top of that list, up there with some really good players for teams that are desperate to improve their side. At the same time, they will look at injury records, and will they look at 10, 15, 20 million here or there injuries dependent, and there may be big decisions to be made. From Wolves' point of view, for the supporters, they'll be pleased to keep Pedro Neto, by and large, I'm sure. But where Wolves are at, they're not in a position where they're forced to sell, as we've sort of gone through last week. But if they want to heavily, or more heavily at least, reinvest in the squad, then they would need to generate some money to do that. And they would like to do that with one or two big sales rather than three, four, five, six smaller sales. And Pedro Neto has to be in that conversation as players that are worth that kind of money that is going to help Wolves reinvest. So it will potentially impact his price and where Wolves are at, because I think it has to be seen, as you've described it, as a risk. There's no other way around it. We've described his injury issues over the last two, three seasons, and those come back to haunt you, despite how good a player is. It'll be interesting to see whether Wolves budge or not on their price. I very much doubt it, considering that they don't have to sell and they don't want to sell, but they will if it allows them to reinvest. And if they don't get the kind of money they need for Pedro Neto, I don't think he goes anywhere. He's on a long contract till 2027 still. It's in Wolves' favour for him to stay, but at the same time, Gary O'Neill needs money to make this team his own, and that's the balance Wolves have now got to find.
I tell you one thing for certain, this will be one of the biggest talking points, not just locally but nationally, of transfer of summer signings and transfer race, transfer centres here, there and everywhere after this season is finished, especially if he doesn't go to the Euros as well, because let's be honest, if Pedro Neto is available, and I think he is available at the right price, like you said, everybody's got a price, Wolves will want that out there to everybody, because they will want a bit of a bidding war. And it's fine if only one club's interested in it and you've got to make a decision. But if you've got a couple of clubs and you're going back and forth, you can see how much money you can eke out. Now, I would say, Liam, that you're probably... this was your last chance before this injury to get maybe 90p on the pound, I would say. So there's a little bit, probably 10% dinged because of his injuries. But I say that getting back to his... he's young enough. He was back to his sensational form. I feel like you're probably getting close to his top market price. I would say with this injury, depending on, and look, this still might be a number that Wolves are willing to sell for, but I say that you're probably looking at more like 70p to the pound now of what his actual top market value is. And what I want to discuss with you now is, do you agree with that? And also, what do you think his market value is, and also, do you think that aligns with the fact what Wolves will be able to part with from a monetary point of view?
I think there'll be lots of clubs that also look at it and say we can get more out of him, whether it's from a performance point of view or from a medical point of view, and think that they can get more out of this player and not have him as injury prone. So there will be clubs that will be tempted to take the risk. You've also got to bear in mind his performances speak for themselves as well, and he's clearly an incredibly talented player that will be very highly sought after. And with the amount of clubs we know are looking at him and interested, it wouldn't surprise me if one of those clubs, whether it's a Chelsea, as they have done in the past, or whether it's someone else, gets a little bit desperate and is willing to pay a bit more than maybe you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think I completely agree with you. I think it's a big talking point throughout the summer. It's going to be one that is probably going to drag on a little bit, because I don't think there's going to be one that's a decision made straight away.
100%.
And then on top of that, I think that there's a lot of things that could change the outlook going into the summer. If he comes back with, I don't know, off the top of my head, 6-7 games to go, maybe 5 games to go, whatever it might be, and he comes back in fine top form going into that summer, does that offset some of the issues that we think will impact his price that we're talking about right now? Potentially it does. I think his market value potentially gets closer to that sort of 90p on the pound that you were talking about. I think there's a lot of things that impact it, and the fact that Wolves don't need to sell but obviously will be willing to invest means that I think Wolves will still get a very good price for Pedro Neto.
Well, he might be coming back to European football, you don't know. And you know, you've got other assets to sell. You know, Guedes, hopefully some money, you know, Pedence, Fabio Silva's obviously talked today about potentially staying at Rangers. You know, like, there is going to be money coming into the football club, but I understand that from a war chest point of view, Gary Neil wants that. There probably will have to be a, you know, one of the bigger signings to or bigger sales from you know, an important first team player. But it remains to be seen. Good. I mean, look, discussed a lot about Pedro Neto, and I get it. But I think, you know, you talk about your best player, and he's just come off with another hamstring injury. I think it's fair game. But you know, for people who don't like it, I apologise for talking about it so long. But I'm going to continue because I'm scheduling it. Timeline for Pedro Neto, timeline for Mateus Cunha, timeline for Bellegarde, timeline for Hwang Hee-chan. It's astonishing, really, that this team keep going with all these forwards decimated. And this is including them not signing a forward in January, and of course Fabio Silva and Sasha Kalajic both going out on loan, and of course Kalajic down, you know, as we speak as well. So it is just, again, bewildering how well this team are doing. I'm looking at the schedule, and I've been looking at this morning, and I'm thinking, you know, that there is a scenario with how bad this is, the way that fixtures are falling, Liam. With Wolves games, and you know, they've got Coventry on Saturday with Bournemouth being postponed, international break, then they've got Villa, which I get that, but like I say, I'm not saying it's a free hit, but it's almost like a bonus game. And then if they get to a semi-final, that means that their home game with Arsenal is postponed as well. Is there a scenario, best case scenario, if they do get past Coventry on the 20th of April, which is, what, 5 weeks from now? 6 weeks from now? Where you could have a potential front three in the FA Cup semi-final of Hwang Hee-chan, Pedro Neto and Mateus Cunha with 5 to 6 to 7 Premier League games left of the season?
It's definitely not impossible, and that's quite exciting. Obviously, they've got to get through the weekend first, but plenty more to come on that.
Of course they do. Yeah. I don't. When people listen to this, I don't want people to be shouting, saying, "Oh, you're not taking Coventry. You're taking Coventry too lightly." I'm not. But in terms of this podcast, in terms of timelines, in terms of the big players and looking forward, you have to look forward. You have to look into the future. We're going to come back to Coventry. I've got a long preview about Coventry to come, and we're not dismissing them by any means. Absolutely not. But in terms of this segment, I feel like it's important to look beyond that, because we have to predict the future and these important players.
Absolutely. Let's take them one by one. So Mateus Cunha, as reported on Friday night by myself and others, he will be at least in contention for this Coventry game, which is very much ahead of schedule. So you would have to put him right now at, what, a 50-50 chance, mm-hmm. something along those lines. But that means that hopefully by the time we get to an FA Cup semi-final, if Wolves get there, as you say, we'll be on the weekend of the 20th of April.
We should be hopefully playing regularly.
Exactly. We should hopefully have a Mateus Cunha that is up and running and starting games again.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. So tick that one off the list, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Hwang Hee-chan, it was described as 6 weeks from the date of the injury. So the date of the injury was the 28th of February against Brighton. So 6 weeks takes you to around the second week of April, around the 10th of April. So
Forest is on the 13th. Forest exactly, away on the 13th of April.
Which is the week before that potential FA Cup semi-final. So we may see a Hwang Hee-chan that is, if not starting in the squad for that game, potentially, correct. If all goes well in the next 6 weeks, the next 5 weeks or so. Neto, as you mentioned, so obviously date of the injury was Saturday the 9th. Mm-hmm. Between then and the 20th of April is 6 weeks. Considering he took 8 weeks on the last hamstring, albeit it was slightly ahead of schedule as described by Gary O'Neill, I would say, depending on the severity of the injury, that there's definitely a chance that he's in and around that squad in time for that game. I'm cautious of overselling it too much without having got an update on where Neto's at. But the timing potentially could work in Wolves' favour. Obviously, Bellegarde with a knee, we're sort of unsure and don't really have something to compare it against from this season, so we'll have to wait and see on him. And obviously, Dawson with a groin, it was described as 50-50 by Gary ahead of the Fulham game. You'd imagine he's not too far away. So, I would like to think the Wolves have got a good chance of having all three of them available, but it's touch and go maybe on a couple.
I agree. I think you've absolutely nailed it there in your timelines. And like I said, we're playing a little bit of the guessing game, but hopefully a little bit of more informed than others in terms of what the injuries are at this moment in time. We're going to be hearing from Gary Neil, of course, on Friday, ahead of the massive game against Nottingham Forest, Coventry on Saturday. But I've got Nottingham Forest in my head because I'm thinking, yeah, that Forest game, of course, you know, the going to Nuno's Nottingham Forest, well, if he's still in charge, it could be a very interesting one in terms of the returns of Hwang Hee-chan. You know, maybe Pedro Neto again might be in and around that squad, maybe at that time, if, you know, remains to be seen. But I guarantee you and look, Wolves will be very cautious and Gary Neil will be very cautious not to rush people back, but they will all be wanting to be available potentially, with fingers crossed, if they get through on Saturday, a date at Wembley and being in that squad and not just watching from the bench. But again, they'll be very, very cautious. And if they do get to that semi-final, then they will have six, not four, as it is at this moment in time, but six games left of the Premier League season, where hopefully these two can be back. They'd have Luton, they'd have Man City, they'd have Crystal Palace, they'd have Liverpool, but they'd also have those rearranged games with Arsenal and with Bournemouth to come. So there is a lot to play for. Actually enjoyed that piece, Liam. Enjoyed that segment. Long segment, but like I say, I think that's... we've covered all bases. Right, we've got to go on to a little bit of a segment that I think some people like, some people don't actually like. I'm lying. People absolutely love it. They love it. And it's Keen or Not Keen. Are you ready? Keen or Not Keen?
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Keen or Not Keen? You can have a little explanation about this before we go on to Coventry and taking the questions from the beautiful people. Keen or Not Keen? Nathan Fraser will score more than one Premier League goal this season. So two or more for Nathan Fraser.
That is tough. I don't think it's going to be a free scoring end of the season for him because he's still got lots to learn. But I thought he did okay against Fulham. I thought he showed a few decent moments. I'm going to go Keane.
Keane, okay. Keane, I love that. Keane, more than a goal this season for Nathan Fraser. Keane or Not Keane? Pedro Neto gets sold this summer for less than £55 million.
Not keen.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I think it's...
So you think Wolves' bar is higher than that?
Yeah, I think injuries to the side, regardless, I think he's market value is far, far greater than that. I think 60 to 70 with injuries is probably more within Wolves' range.
Okay. That helped because of the length of the contract, because of his age, etc. as well.
And the performances, all of it, all of the above, but yeah, absolutely.
Keen or Not Keen, Santiago Bueno is ahead of Totti Gomez in the pecking order.
No, not keen, not a chance. No.
But I mean, this is maybe more of an intro into you explaining that, you know, the decision on Saturday and what Gary said afterwards and the four and the five. It's more of that. It's teeing you up for that, Liam.
No, I'm not even gonna talk about that. That's a disgrace that you've asked me. It was an interesting sort of risk from Gary Neil, and to be honest, we didn't really get a proper opportunity to analyse that risk because of the injuries and how quickly Wolves had to change it. So I can't really say whether it was a success or not, but it was a risk nonetheless. Dropping Totti is understandable in the sense that he wanted to play a right footer and a left footer, but not understandable in the sense that I think Wolves are a better team when Totti Gomez is in the side, regardless of formation. The formation, I think, was a risk in itself, but I think you saw how much better Wolves are with Totti Gomez in defence than without him. So I understand the reasons why... why Gary Neil made those decisions, but I don't think it's a decision he probably makes quickly again. Albeit, saying that, you know, he didn't really get a chance to see whether it was a success or not. Maybe you'll think, oh, you know what, there's another opportunity here for me to give it a go. But I just think Totti's just so good. He's so athletic, so quick. His positioning's excellent. He's a real old-school defender. One of the most natural defenders in that squad. So I'd be surprised if he's not in. And I think Santi Bueno's actually done pretty well. When Dawson's been out, obviously he's not had loads of opportunities. He had maybe a couple shaky moments in that first half, but much better after that against Fulham on Saturday. I think he's a good player who's got a lot more to come, but Totti for me is certainly above him in the pecking order.
Keen or not keen, if Wolves get to Wembley, Judah and Keane go for a slap-up meal in the centre of London Town.
Absolutely keen. It's going to be... In fact, you know what? We might not even make it to the game.
Oh.
It's going to be dangerous. Scary.
Anyone who have got some good London restaurant recommendations and will be able to house myself and Mr. Liam Keane, we're happy to and open to bribes in any shape or form, especially when it comes to nutritious steaks and delicious food, wherever it may be.
I mean... But you know what? We might have to work the contacts a little bit, you know, massage a few people. Not literally. You never know, though.
Happy days. Oh, all sorts go down in London, Kino. My goodness
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
Front three for a semi.
Excuse me?
Massage. Front three for a potential semi.
Wow.
Keen or not keen is Cunha. Neto, Huang.
Oh, I'm really keen on it being the reality. I think they might just be off it. So I'm going to say not keen. I want it to happen, but I think they might just be off that being a possibility, unless we get good news on the severity of Neto and maybe the progress of Huang in the next couple of days. Well, a couple of weeks, really.
I agree. I would say that just about in a 55-45... way of thinking, I think they might go just a tiny bit cautious, especially if they are, and I think they will be, right in, sat bang in the middle of the title race, but of the top eight in that Premier League. I would say that two out of those three will start with the other one on the bench, I would say. And it'll be two out of those three in a Sarabia, let's say. Of course, a lot can change, and then one on the bench.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. But, you know, a lot could happen between now and
it can, of course
it
can.
So it'll be interesting
to see.
Of course
it can. Right, kellentoastman.co.uk. We're moving on. We're not. Did you buy the fridge freezer from last week?
Oh no, it's still in the basket. I still need to check out.
Liam Keane. This is one for Rosie, and one that I think, to be honest, you could be literally the apple of her eye if you get her this, because this is an incredible piece of equipment that anyone would love to have in their lives, especially Rosie.
I'm genuinely concerned where you're going with this one.
No. I'm not joking. Like, I'm clicking on this now. One, I can't believe the price, and two, I think that it will be a great look for her. The Beldray Airgility Cordless Vacuum is a brilliant piece of equipment, perfect for ceiling to floor cleaning. It's a brilliantly manoeuvrable for a fast, smooth, and effective clean action. The vacuum cleaner is lightweight, giving you effortless control, and the rechargeable battery gives up to 40 minutes running time for a single charge. I mean, Kino, this is absolute nailed on, isn't it, for you?
And I know how... One, important, and two, expensive vacuums are.
You've been doing this. This isn't your first rodeo, my friend. Can you imagine the price that you would normally get charged for this?
You're looking at... Because I actually got one not that long ago, probably the last year or so. You're looking at easily $200, $250
for I agree. Like, you know, they've got Dyson ones now and Hoover, but Beldray, absolutely top draw. I tell you what, let's go into double figures, because it's not even £100. It's not 80. It's not 70. It's 2 times 3 plus
54
equals
2 times 3 is 6 plus 54.
I can see your hands now.
60.
60 quid. It's 60 quid, Kino. 60 squid. And I dare say you might get a little bit of expressions of our discounts. 10% discount, Kino, for that. And what will your price be?
Oh, wait a second. I can tell you this. It would be 54.
Yeah! Come on! Come on! Get in there, Kino. The Beldray Airgility Cordless Vacuum. KellenToasterman.co.uk. That's KellenToasterman.co.uk. Okay, questions from the beautiful people. Let's go, baby. We'll leave Sophia Goldsmith's question, because that will be discussed in the Coventry preview. Well, moving on from, I guess, what we discussed before on Pedro Neto, Jonathan Bailey says, has yesterday, or Saturday, knocked £10 million off the value of Pedro Neto?
it's a tough one. I'm struggling with it a little bit because part of me is thinking, you know, yes, because of the injuries and the way that clubs would analyse it. But at the same time, clubs, I think, will think they can get more out of him. And if he comes back and does well before the end of the season, there's no reason Wolves, that money isn't, you know, still available on the table. So I'm going to say no, but I'm going to hedge. I'm going to be with a caveat of let me change my mind in a few weeks' time if I have to.
Okay. All things Wolves. So why are our forwards all getting hamstring injuries? Is it the style of play, the medical team missing the signs, or just unlucky?
Now, it's an interesting one because I think it's certainly worth looking into and asking questions of, which I absolutely will do. But looking at it from face value and it's not just the type of injuries, but as you say, the fact that it's always been forwards. I think this is freakish bad luck for Wolves. I really do. Because they've had so many players in so many positions that have hardly missed a minute of football all season. And all of a sudden you have players who, you know, who are out in the same position. Obviously, Huang and Neto as well have also had injury issues in the past. I think that's important to mention because they've got two players there that are injury prone to an extent. So that's going to impact the fact that they're both forwards and they're both injury prone. But Bellegarde and Cunha, as far as I'm aware, I don't think they've got particularly bad injury records. And it's just terrible bad luck for a squad that is already paper thin. And then you lose these players and you've got Pablo Sarabia as your only senior fit attacking player. So I think it's terrible, terrible luck the Wolves are now going to have to overcome.
Andrew Hadfield says, has our style of play with quick counter-attacks contributed to the frontline injury issues, or is it just unfortunate? So, you know, kind of similar to what they were saying.
It's a tough one because I suppose running it at full pelt, if you will, to some degree may give a player potentially a greater risk. And that's coming from someone who's certainly not an expert in terms of, you know, the medical department. But you have to remember how sort of fast-paced, dynamic and difficult Premier League football is in 2024. And players are at risk of injuries all the time, regardless of whether they're playing counter-attacking football or not. So I don't think it would play a part to the extent of Wolves being this unfortunate. I think that's just, again, terrible luck.
Joey Hepp, is it correct that Gary O'Neill has a touchline ban for Coventry?
I'm glad you asked this. Quite a few people a little bit worried and concerned, understandably so, because you don't want to lose Gary O'Neill from the touchline. But no, it was one of the... there was sort of a coming together between the two benches. One of the Fulham coaches and Sean Derry, one of Wolves' assistants, were both booked. It was not Gary O'Neill. So Gary O'Neill will be on the touchline for Coventry. I think there was a couple of places that got it confused and thought that Gary was out. So no, good news on that front. Gary O'Neill will be available to be on the touchline and hopefully seeing a Wolves win.
Excellent. Neil Whitehouse, should Wolves reach the cup final, it would be brilliant if the club records and releases a song like back in the day. What song would you like to hear?
that's actually a great question.
Thinking Nathan Jude would go for a cheeky classic, he says.
I can see this.
Oh, hold on, then.
I can see this already. I'm already visualising it. Let me get it up.
Oh, I might get one up as well. Song.
mate, that's so bad.
One second.
Bosses are furious.
1 second. shall I play mine? Oh, it might take a while, though.
I think there's a long intro to this.
Huh?
I can't play mine.
Oh, let me have a look. See if I can get this one.
Well, no, I can play it, but I can't play it for the reason.
What do you mean you can't play it? It's sweary.
It's very sweary.
Oh, you can't play that.
So instantly, as soon as I play it, there'll be lots of words that will not be welcome. Oh, my word.
Oh, my... What a tune!
I tell you what, I reckon after his running the other day, I reckon Mario Lemieux has got some.
It's such a great song. This is a PB song. I'm keeping it running because it's such a great song.
Mario Lemieux hit me. 100%. I can see it.
Gomez, Neto, Sarabia.
Oh mate, this is unbelievable.
Semedo!
What a song.
Can you imagine that? That's the anthem. Come on.
That would be amazing. I could see the players performing that.
I love that song.
That's a great tune. That's a great shout from you.
What was the song then? If you can't pronounce it, it's too sweary.
It was Hit 'Em Up by Tupac.
Crikey. What's going on?
This sprung to mind straight away because basically it's a diss track at Biggie Smalls and that sort of East West rivalry from back in the day in the 90s.
I don't know anything. I don't understand anything you've just said. I've got absolutely no idea. Honestly, I'd rather listen to Hwang Hee-chan talk to me in South Korean. I would understand more than what you've just said.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of people that are listening to this that will understand what I'm talking about. And if you do, please tweet me so I can send them to Nathan later. I just called you Nathan. I never call you Nathan. That was
no,
weird.
You don't. That sounds weird. Don't like it.
It's like when Rachel calls you Liam. She never calls me Liam. It's weird.
Weird.
It's a diss track basically. So I can just see this, and it's like, you know, Wolves dissing.
Diss is in. Diss is in like dissing someone. Diss track.
Yes.
Like a diss.
Yes. Yeah.
Like apostrophe D-I-S.
Yes.
Oh God. Terrible. Terrible. That's even a thing.
I could see that. But this was back in the '90s, whatever it was. So I could see this happening with Wolves. You know what modern footballers are like. They love their music and their fashion and all this kind of stuff. I could see a lot of the Wolves players performing this. I could see it happening. Maybe performing it with slightly adapted lyrics so that it's family friendly. But Us Against the World, Never Say Die, Hit 'Em Up, boom. Lights, camera, action.
We should get someone who's got a decent following. I can't put it on, but saying better song for Wembley and a poll for those two. Bangers. Bangers.
I think it's
entrance.
Got
I love that. Maybe I was. Mine's. I'm thinking more of a montage than actual players singing. Can't players singing up for the anthem.
I know. I think the question was like, you know, back in the day when they used to have players recording.
I know. We're in the present day. I'm moving it. I'm changing a little bit of it. It's fine.
Moving the goalposts. Lopetegui, you'll be fuming.
Oh goodness me! Let's just hope there's not a mask behind the goal at Wembley, shall we? Crikey. Simon Aston says, keen or not keen, if and when Wolves reach the FA Cup final, Liam Keane star finally gets down on one knee in the centre circle at Wembley. Also, great explanation around the PSR. First time I've heard it and made sense. Keep up the good work, boys. So thank you very much, Simon. Keener. I mean, from a romance point of view, you said on this podcast that it could become in 2024 the big proposal. Could that be centre circle, Wembley, Wolves, Man City? Oh, come on, it's building it up there.
I jumped the gun a little bit there.
You did, not the first time.
Yeah, no chance, mate. Sorry.
Why?
I don't know if I'd be able to get clearance to get on the Wembley pitch to do that, to be honest.
Okay.
I'm already envisaging Wolves winning the FA Cup and Gary Neil turning and him calling me over to come lift the trophy instead of Max Kilman and me just lofting it. I'm not joking. Could you imagine? That's sad, isn't it?
No, I can't.
No, I don't think they're going to get that one signed off. And to be honest, I don't think it would go down very well.
No. Potentially not.
You want it to be a quiet, intimate affair, if you will.
Oh, dear. Stu, are you recording this early so you can have half a day off to go and watch Dune Part 2? To be honest, I haven't seen Dune 1, to be honest, Stu. I've seen the trailers for it, that big monster thing that looks very much like a part of someone's anatomy. Have you seen Dune? Looks like a lot of sand, probably some monster situation. Film of the year, he says.
I haven't seen the first one, but apparently...
It's March, though.
Both really good. So
are they?
Maybe I will need to give the first one a go. The first one's on Netflix now.
Oh, really? Okay,
so I might
watch
to
that
give
then.
It a go,
worth
and
watching?
And the second one's obviously in cinemas as we speak.
Oh, let's. I'm going to watch that this week then. Stu is very good. I have a very good movie buff. I'm sure he was up last night watching the Oscars. No, I'm not. Early in the week, due to the fact that I may be at Cheltenham on Tuesday and I may be at Cheltenham on Wednesday because we love a little bit of betting. Anyone got some good tips, please? Send them across. Right, one more. Where should we go? I'm just going to scroll and you told me to stop.
Okay. Keep scrolling.
Scrolling.
Keep scrolling.
Scrolling. Oh, you douche.
Keep scrolling, my friend.
Scrolling.
And stop.
Oh. Okay, here we go. Wolves Dallas. Are there any players on loan that could be recalled to help the squad?
No, because you cannot recall loan players outside of a transfer window.
Correct. I did see a couple of people actually when Neto went down, Bellegarde went down, already putting lists together of free agents who may or may not be available. Do you think that would be a... One, is that something that Wolves could do? And two, can you see something like that happening? I guess the last thing was probably the most recent thing was like a Diego Costa outside of the window from... And look, you know, I actually thought the Diego Costa, it was better that signed than they didn't, to be honest. I think he did help, especially towards the end. Would that be an avenue, do you think, if, let's say, God forbid, they lost another one, that they would look to sign a short-term contract on someone?
No, I don't think so. They'll have the opportunity to, I believe, because their squad isn't full, as in like the Premier League squad that they have to register, mm-hmm. Isn't full, so they would have the opportunity to add to that. But as far as I'm aware, it's not something Wolves are considering at or looking at. So I don't. I'd be very surprised if anything developed on that front. So no, I think it's a pretty confident no. But I will update if anything changes.
I feel like I need to get Entrance back on just to build me up for this. Saturday, the 16th of March, 12:15. It's Wolverhampton Wanderers against Coventry City in FA Cup quarter-final. I believe it's televised. I think it's ITV1. It is on. It's a massive game. First of all, I want to say, and I hope that this is the case, and I think it will be, and it will be a call to arms, I think, back end of this week. You want that atmosphere, even though it's midday, absolutely buzzing. I'm sure the fans will make it an incredible occasion. It will be a sellout, guaranteed. You know, whether the club will advertise this as well, but you know, with all the flags, I'm sure there'll be some stuff that they will put in there to get them over the line, as they have been doing. But you want the flags waving, you want scarves, you want it to be an absolute party atmosphere, because this is a huge game of football, and to send Wolves to Wembley for the first time since 2019 would be, especially with this squad and everything they've gone through, would be sensational. I'm so nervous already for the game, but I'm excited nervous as well. It's going to be a fantastic occasion. Liam, how do you see it going? And more importantly, if we're ruling Pedro Neto out of the game, which I think we can safely do, if we're ruling Bellegarde out of the game, which we can safely do, I think, what 11, and there's so many ways this can go, do you think that Gary Neil will end up selecting for that game on Saturday?
Yes. So the first thing I'll mention, as you've already pointed out, is the supporters. Now, you look at that Brighton game, dragging them over the line, Fulham again, the fans are going to be so important to this game, and they have been in many games this season. The atmosphere, as it always at many clubs, some games on, some games off. But there's been lots of... I mean, the Man City win at home, for obvious reasons, was absolutely brilliant in that regard as well. So there's a massive importance on the fans playing their part in this one. And I know for a fact that there are fans, fan groups, old Gold Pack as well, you know, there are fan groups that are preparing and working with the club on building the atmosphere for Saturday's game. Obviously, with it being an early kickoff, there's always that concern around it not quite being as lively. But there's going to be flags, there's going to be banners, there's going to be a lot put in.
Tunes,
absolutely. There's going to be a lot put into making this a big occasion. And I'm just looking forward to getting up there early before the game and getting in my seat and just soaking it all in ahead of the game, because it is an absolutely monumental fixture. It's Wolves' biggest game of the season by far, regardless of the fact that I still obviously believe that getting into Europe, Wolves' best chance will come through the league rather than the FA Cup because of the teams left in it. But regardless of that, getting Wolves back to Wembley and having an opportunity to either do one better or just to have a good day out. I don't want that to sound like I'm putting the semi-final to one side already, but Wolves are going to face a tough test in that game. But getting Wolves back to Wembley and creating memories with this squad and the job Gary Neil's done will be a remarkable feat. So this is such a big game because of all of those reasons, and considering that you might get a game up front at this rate. So looking at the team, if we're going to assume that all the players that are currently out are out, so let's say Cunha, Huang, Bellegarde, Neto all out, let's also assume Dawson's out for the time being, and obviously we'll leave that as a 50-50, but I'll do my team as if all five of those players are unavailable.
I would prefer that you pick the team with Dawson in.
Okay, I can do that. I can do
if
that.
If that's way. Okay.
Whatever you want, Chief. Whatever you want.
There's one player in this 11, and I'm sure you're going to be talking about him now, so I won't mention his name, who I don't know whether he's going to play in defence, in midfield, yes, or up front. But the floor is yours.
So I think Wolves go back to a 5. I think Sarr starts.
Yeah.
I think Semedo, Kilman. We'll go Dawson if he's fit. To be honest, regardless of whether he's fit, I think it's either Dawson or Santi Bueno. I actually think my system and the team I'm going to pick here is the same, regardless of that. Mm-hmm. Totti on the left.
Yeah.
Hugo Bueno at left.
Hugo Bueno, okay.
Gomez and Lamina in midfield. Sarabia on the right. Fraser up top. Ryan Aitnori as a left winger.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a few moments where we've I think the last pod we spoke about it as well, where we've considered wondering, maybe he'll do that. Maybe he'll bring... We saw how Aitnori played, first of all, against Fulham. But he also played left back. He played left wing back. He then played striker for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then he moved over to right wing at the end of that game against Fulham. And considering his talents, obviously, I mean, defensively, I think he's been very good this season, and he's improved on something that there's always been a question mark with him on that.
Mm-hmm.
But going forward, we know where his qualities lie, and his fast feet, dribbling, speed. He obviously scored, obviously, the against Fulham, and he would like to maybe add a few more numbers to his game, but he's dangerous in and around the box. I just think, considering Wolves' injury concerns, Hugo Bueno hasn't played a lot, will be very frustrated, but he's a very capable player, a very capable defender. I think it makes a lot of sense to play that. If you don't play that, you are playing Aitnori at wing back, you're leaving Bueno out the side, and you're probably playing Doyle, and you either play a midfield 3 or Lamina plays his wide left position again, like he did for the majority of the Fulham game. Now, I could see that happening as well, but from the start, I think it makes a lot of sense to play Aitnori out there, have Lamina in midfield, and you keep Doyle back as an option for later in that game, and I think he'll be a very important option as well at some point during that fixture, which will be a really tight game, I think.
I hate to say it, but I 100% completely agree with what you've just picked. I think that is the way to go. I think that's the smart way to go. I think the temptation of whether you could play a back 4 against Coventry, I think you keep it tight. First and foremost, you want to keep that clean sheet. You keep that clean sheet, Wolves obviously, win the game eventually or it goes to penalties, but you don't think that's going to be the case. It will be, you keep a clean sheet, you're giving yourself the best possible chance. And I think a back 5, back to where they know best, Totti, Gomez back in. And of course, you've got Dawson, Kilman, Dawson hopefully, Kilman, Totti. I mean, that in itself going forward is a formidable trio to have in that box, in and around that box, which will give you, the best possible chance at set pieces, dead ball scenarios. So I absolutely am with you on that. As you've been talking there, I've just backed Ryan Aitnori to score the first and the last goal at 20-1.
Love that.
20-1. You could have a striker. By the way, peeps, you might get better prices than that, but I think Ryan Aitnori, and I agree with you, will be further forward, if not a left wing forward on Saturday. If you can go and have a little dabble now and beat the bookies to it and try and get a 25-1, a 33-1, you could be doing that for a Wolves striker against Coventry or Wolves forward. Definitely get involved. And I guess the big question, Liam, and I'll say what I think will happen and then you can shoot me down afterwards. I think I agree, and I think you're going to have the likes of Doyle on the bench. I think the only one who may or may not start, but I agree, I think it'll be Hugo Bueno, unless they go with a little bit more experience, and he has played left wing back this season ahead of Bueno, is Matt Doherty in this game. Just for a bit of authority, a bit of nous, a bit of experience, again, someone who can overlap, who knows where the back of the net is, I wouldn't be shocked to see him there.
I could agree with that. Yeah, I think that I was actually fairly close to picking him over Bueno. So that for me is probably one of the biggest question marks. If we're going to assume that he doesn't play three midfielders, then I think, that's the... Or chase or back 4, obviously.
But if you do...
That's the option.
I think actually he's got more chance of playing if they do go with a back 3, because you've got a little bit more protection than if you go with a back four, where I would definitely go Bueno. But I think with the three, you've got Doc's got a chance because of the way that he can get forward, and you've got a little bit of protection, as like I say, in Totti Gomez on that left hand side of the centre back trio. So that's the only thing that I would say I could see. But what I want to discuss is, of course, the big news that you broke on last Friday, that Mateus Cunha is way ahead of the schedule. He is way ahead of the scans. He's feeling good. He was doing some sprints last week. They're hoping he has a full week of training, and he did not. He refused to rule him out of this game on Saturday. In fact, Gary Neal went as far as say he's desperate to play. I just wonder, with everything that happened on Saturday, and I know it's different players and different timetables and different feelings, whether they might just, if they were, you know, had that decision to make, maybe they might go a little bit more cautious because of what's gone on with Pedro Neto. And I know the two separate cases, but I think you understand what I'm saying to you, Liam. My prediction would be, and this is, of course, if Cunha trains well all week and he takes part in training and doesn't show any reaction, my thought would be Mateus Cunha is on the bench on Saturday against Coventry City. Absolutely not a start for me. He's on the bench. He's available if needed. If the game's tight, if they're losing, if they're drawing. But if Wolves are winning that game, and hopefully winning it comfortably, hopefully by a couple of goals, but even at 1-0 or 2-1, I would not put Mateus Cunha on that pitch unless it was the goal, the score was level or they were losing. I think he'll be on the bench as an emergency situation, but if they don't need to use him, they won't, especially with international break coming up.
Yeah, I think it was certainly way on their minds and way on Gary O'Neill's mind what happened with Neto. But I think they have to treat it as an individual case and base it on the information they have in front of them. Hopefully, if all goes well, he'll be involved to some degree. But I wholeheartedly agree with that as well from you. You don't play him from the start. I'd be gobsmacked if he starts. And you only, if he is involved in the squad, you only use him if it's desperate for Wolves to get through that game. If it's not, you use what you have and you hope to get through against what will be a very tough game. Look, Coventry are no mugs. They're ninth in the Championship as it stands. They've just beaten Watford 2-1 at the weekend.
Yeah.
Mark Robbins knows how to set a team up. I think he's done very well there over the last few years and has put them on potentially the verge of getting into the playoffs and fighting for a Premier League spot. They've got a couple of decent goal scorers. Hadji Wright scored a couple for them. Ellis Sims scored a couple for them. I think 13 and 12 for the pair of them, respectively, this season. They've got dangerous players. Now, it's going to be interesting because I've got a good mate of mine who's a Coventry season ticket holder, follows them all over. Spoke to him the other day about it, and he said that, look, we actually normally like to play. We're a side that wants to have the ball and wants to play. I suspect, considering they're playing Premier League opposition, that Coventry will want to set up to frustrate Wolves. But it'll be interesting to see how disciplined they are in that and whether Wolves are able to find the gaps. And it's down to Wolves to break them down. And if Coventry do come out and play, you would like to think that plays into Wolves' hands to go and catch them on the break. So it'll be interesting how they do set up. But I think they're a dangerous side nonetheless. I think you overlook Coventry at your peril. And I don't think Gary Neal or Wolves will do that in any way. It's now up to them to turn up on the day and make it a memorable afternoon at Molineux.
Absolutely. Right, it comes on to predictions. And before I start that, congratulations, new man Wolves fan, because you are the owner of a beautiful new blue third kit. Is going to be coming across the Atlantic to you, Liam Keane. Congratulations to you, sir, predicting Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, Fulham 1. I've actually finally got a delivery of merch from Wolves, so we've got quite a lot. I'll be sending out some kits, I think, on Thursday to lucky winners from the past. There's one already across the pond I've got to send to. I've got one, Steve, I've got to send him some, I think, in Bristol as well. So this is flying off the shelves. I mean, we say retweet, free entry into these competitions. I mean, we're paying out, Keena. We are paying out. We're paying out regularly.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm on a bit of a roll right now with my predictions. So let's make it. Will it be three in a row if I get this right?
could be three in a row, baby.
I think it
could
will be
three.
Let's hope it is.
In a row. What are we giving away, though, for the big game?
What are we giving away? That's a tough one. I might need your help on this one. You're a man who loves luxury.
Okay.
A man who knows what he wants.
Yeah. So I think we give away a cordless vacuum.
Absolutely.
A cordless Beldray vacuum, and you can pick the Wolverhampton Wanderers bit of merch.
Ooh.
Is there any cup final retro shirts kicking around?
Oh, there's definitely retro ones that they have them in the club shop, things like that. There's definitely some retro stuff going around.
Shall we go? Okay, so we go. The cordless vacuum and a retro Wolf shirt of your choice.
Let's do it. I think that's a good shout.
Okay, you love to see it. Let's do that. Okay, I'll do the first one and then we shall finish with Kino. I'm going to say Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, Coventry City 0. Wolves are going to Wembley.
Well, we didn't prepare this.
Oh!
We haven't discussed this.
Oh!
But I also am going for Wolves 2.
Come on!
Coventry 0.
Kino!
Going
come on!
To Wembley, baby.
Come on! Come on! I can't even imagine. I'm so excited. Thank you very much for listening this week, everyone. It's out on Monday, so you've got the 4 weeks to listen to it. If you have listened to it, listen to it again. Tell the peeps. I've enjoyed this. I think it's been a good crack.
Absolutely. I mean, considering that it's such a monumental game, it's a nice way to build up to it. And I tell you what, I'm already excited. By Thursday, Friday, Saturday morning, it's going to be through the roof.
And a little announcement as well. Hopefully by the back end of this week, we shall be having an announcement about something that's happening on Monday as well, and each Monday going forward. But I shall tease that and let you sweat on that until later on in the week. But it's all good. And I think, for me, from Kino, we have to play out on what was going to be a massive, massive, massive game. It's Wolves. It's Coventry City at Molineux. For a chance to go to Wembley. From me, from Kino, have a great week. Have a great weekend. We'll see you at Molineux in 5 days' time. From me, from the Boy Wonder. Take care. Bye-bye.